Welcome back to the show. Evan Bray, good to have you here. Well, if there's something that I could take to the bank as a guarantee, in a week where we're talking about two new pipelines in Canada, the editor and owner of pipelineonline.ca is going to want to talk about that, is going to be happy about that, and I'm sure that's the case. Brian Zinchuk, editor, owner of pipelineonline.ca, with Saskatchewan's Energy News, joins us today. Brian, thanks for taking our call.
Good morning.
Two pipelines. This is, your fingers must be sore from writing stories about this.
Well, the one I put out here on the second one was about 4,000 words, so yeah.
Let's talk, before we even get into the pipelines, we're hearing this morning the ceasefire is done, that this is obviously going to have an impact, or maybe it is already, on oil prices.
Geez, who could have predicted that the ceasefire wasn't going to last?
Yeah.
So Western Texas Intermediate right now is $75.98 this morning. That's up $3 from when I sent you the thing yesterday. WCS, which is Canadian, Western Canadian Select, 55.27, so the $20 differential. Now, since TMX went online, the first TMX expansion, the differential has tightened up to around $12 to $13. Right now it's expanded. I think that's because the market for West Texas Intermediate is a little bit more dynamic than WCS. And then the global price, Brent oil, is $80.42. So we were actually getting to the point where under $70, that's where people start going, well, maybe we're not going to spend as much. But we're above that again. I don't think this war is ending anytime soon. And it's reflected in the rig count, because the rig count right now at 41 as of yesterday, which was 3 for potash and 38 for oil, that's one of the highest numbers I've seen in a while. Mm-hmm. So, you know, companies are spending some money to, you know, get some production online here and get things going.
Brian Zinchuk is my guest. Okay, let's start with the West Coast pipeline. It's changed its course a couple of times, where it's going to go. Just your thoughts on, you know, we finally heard some more progress on this last week, right around that July 1st deadline.
Yeah, so what happened is that instead of going to Prince Rupert, which was the most likely candidate, or even Kitimat, which was the original terminus for Northern Gateway, which is, didn't work out, this is going to parallel for most of it, but not all of it right away, down to the Lower Mainland. It's not going to end at Burnaby. It's going to end at Roberts Bank. And there's several implications of that. Number one, it's about a day and a half further sail each direction to go to Asian markets from the Lower Mainland than it is from Prince Rupert. I was strongly an advocate of Prince Rupert because it's a deep water port. It's a right turn, a left turn, you're out in open ocean, and it's a lot closer to markets. Plus, it's not a congested port compared to the Lower Mainland. This one here, Roberts Bank, is within spitting distance, quite literally, of the U.S. border. It will have the ability to load supertankers. Now, that's really, really important, because the existing terminus for the Trans Mountain and Trans Mountain expansion on Burrard Inlet, it can only handle mid-sized tankers called Aframax. A supertanker, called a VLCC, or very large crude carrier, it can handle about 4 to 5 times the amount of an Aframax. And because they never got around to dredging it, we couldn't even fully load an Aframax. We could only load about 70 or 80% of the volume and leave the rest empty because it wasn't deep enough for the water. Now, they're looking at dredging that now, finally. But building at Roberts Bank means we can bring the big tankers in and we can play with the big boys. That's really important.
So, you know, maybe that's answering a question that some of our texters had is, you know, if you hear the stories that there's still room on the Trans Mountain pipeline for more oil, why do we need another one that parallels it essentially for a big part of the journey? Why can't we just double production in the pipeline that's there?
Actually, that room that you're talking of, my understanding is it was filled in June, is that there is no more room in the Trans Mountain line. It's now full.
Okay.
And one of the things that we always want to do is you always want to have the next project on the go so that when you do fill up, you don't end up with price differentials, which is what happened for much of the last decade. You always want to have that little bit extra capacity so that you have room for additional production. And they're going to have to grow production a lot for these projects. Like, we're talking 1 million barrels to the West Coast, 500,000 to the Central Canada, and another 1 million or so, or 800,000 barrels towards the south with the Bridger pipeline. We're going to skip the Bridger one today. We've talked about that before.
Sure. Brian Zinchuk is my guest. I want to ask Brian, because I know you've talked about this in some of the articles that you've written, I've read on your website, the advantage of essentially following the same path as a previous or existing pipeline. Why was that an option that was chosen in this case, going to the West Coast?
Well, it's very applicable to anyone who's done any hiking through snow or anything like that. It's breaking trail really does make a difference. It's much easier to always follow an existing right-of-way than it is to start a new one. It's easier for dealing with landowners, First Nations, all sorts of stuff. So that's effectively why they chose to go this route. So it'll be the third pipeline along that right-of-way. There are a few variations up in the lower mainland as well as up west of Jasper near Mount Robson. They've changed a little bit to make it a little bit easier to do it. They learned a few lessons from the last time around. But it's mostly the same right-of-way. Now, there's no Saskatchewan oil is going to go into this pipeline. Some people have said that, well, it will get from Hardisty. It doesn't start at Hardisty. It starts at Bruderheim. No Saskatchewan oil goes to Bruderheim. But what it does is that as oil comes off of the system that currently goes on the Enbridge mainline, that will free up space for Saskatchewan oil on the Enbridge mainline. Now, our oil joins the mainline either at Hardisty, coming from Lloydminster into Alberta, back through Hardisty. It joins at Kerrobert, or it joins at Cromer, Manitoba. So if it frees up some space and sends some oil the other direction, that gives us some space for us if we add additional production, if we actually get around to doing that.
I was going
to
say, we talk often about the plan to increase the barrels per day, but have we seen any growth on that, Brian?
Well, we're not seeing a lot in the south. I mean, in the south, we're kind of, staying flat. But the other thing is that in northwest Saskatchewan, there's actually major moves from Cardinal Energy, from Strathcona, to dramatically increase production. Like Strathcona's plan by themselves is to add over 50,000 barrels in the next few years. Cardinal is working on SAGD projects, so I think add another 20 or 30,000. So those are substantial things. And then Cenovus keeps on plugging away on what they're doing. So the future for expansion for oil production in Saskatchewan is in the northwest through SAGD, which is steam-assisted gravity drainage of heavy oil.
Right. The notion of who's paying for it, of course, bubbles up all the time, and it doesn't. I don't think you can read an article on this West Coast pipeline without contemplation. I think people are gun shy based on what happened the last time the federal government got involved. Do you see this taking a different path?
Well, depending on which politician you listen to, Daniel Smith will say that even though Trans Mountain expansion was extremely expensive, it was supposed to be $7.5 billion. Ended up being around $34 billion. She points out that even then, it is still making money and recently produced, I think, $1.2 billion in profit. So if it's a money-making venture, even at that price, governments are saying, well, then we're going to invest in it. And the Ontario government has said the same thing about the pipeline to Ontario that we'll talk about in the next segment.
Mm. Okay, well, let's take the break now, Brian, because I do want to get into this new pipeline that was just discussed this week that moves from west to east, something that I think caught some people by surprise and some people asking why it's needed, given the fact that there is a pipeline now, albeit running through the United States, that delivers Western Canadian oil to Ontario. So we'll talk a little bit more about that and where it is different than the proposed pipeline that was originally talked about. We'll be back with Brian Zinchuk here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOS. Welcome back to the show. Brian Zinchuk is joining us for his regular monthly check-in, the editor and owner of PipelineOnline.ca. If we're going to talk pipelines, there's no better time than right now. Just this week, Brian, we hear Doug Ford, the Premier of Ontario, and Danielle Smith, the Premier of Alberta, announcing plans for at least looking into the feasibility of a pipeline from Alberta to Sarnia, Ontario. Is this essentially the latest version of, what was it called, Energy East?
Yeah, so this is Energy East 2.0, kind of, sort of, not really. So the difference there's multiple differences, several of which have impact on Saskatchewan. The original Energy East was supposed to start at Hardisty, was supposed to reuse and a little used natural gas pipeline for most of its length, at least to the far end of Ontario, and then build new pipe all the way through Quebec to New Brunswick. There's nothing past Quebec here, doesn't touch Quebec. Quebec's pretty much wholly excluded, as is New Brunswick, although Ontario Premier Doug Ford would like to do that eventually, but that's not in the cards right now. What this is really all about is that a few years ago, some idiot dropped an anchor on the Enbridge pipeline that crosses the Strait of Mackinac, which connects, I think it's Lake Huron and Lake Michigan. And that's where the pipeline, Enbridge Line 5, crosses the Great Lakes. If that thing should ever burst, it will really cause major damage to the Great Lakes. So ever since then, the government of Michigan has been working to try to shut down that pipeline. They don't care about what we need or whatever. They want it shut down. And Enbridge is working to build a tunnel under it. It's just been nothing but a disaster. So anyhow, if they do shut that down, Central Canada will freeze in the dark. That's not an exaggeration, because almost all their oil that comes into there comes via Enbridge Line 5, which goes from the Lower Peninsula to the Upper Peninsula to the Lower Peninsula, and then over to Southern Ontario near Sarnia. What this pipeline would do, it would parallel the existing Enbridge main line from Hardisty to Regina, and then follow the TransCanada main line from Regina all the way to Eastern Ontario, almost to within spitting distance of the Quebec border, and then hook southwest of new pipe down to Sarnia. And this would allow them to basically replace Line 5. If Michigan has any success in shutting down Line 5, this new pipeline will become number one national priority the next minute. It will be absolutely critical.
My understanding, though, Brian, is there's some protections in place from that pipeline being shut down.
Well, that's why this is still a feasibility study instead of shovels going into the ground. That can change. The only redemption here is that Gretchen Whitmer, the governor of Michigan, has decided not to run for president. If she did, you can guarantee that she would shut this pipeline down if she was successful. So anyhow, a major thing about Energy East was that there was supposed to have been an on-ramp at Mooseman, which would have allowed almost every drop of Saskatchewan, southeast Saskatchewan, Manitoba oil, to instead go on Energy East instead of the Enbridge main line to the American Midwest. That's not in the cards here. Mooseman is not mentioned at all. It's not on any of the maps. No one said anything about Saskatchewan oil in this regard. So that part is deleted from the Energy East project. So if any Saskatchewan oil does come in, it's going to be from western Saskatchewan, going from the Lloydminster main line to Hardisty and then joining from there. So that's the implication for Saskatchewan. It would mean a major project passing through this province, but not a lot of our production would be seen on it.
We've only got about 2 minutes, Brian, but I wanted you to talk about, Manitoba right now is saying, no, we're not cooperating.
Yeah, that's a big problem. But, one of the things that BC acknowledged is that provinces do not have the ability to shut down pipelines. And this is from a guy who really, really, really hates pipelines, David Eby. So if he's acknowledged that, maybe Wapakoneta's going to have to acknowledge that as well. In the last minute, we need to talk about Interties, the announcement last week.
Yep.
Big news here. So there's a bunch of Interties announced between provinces and federal government is basically going to foot the bill for. And most of them are relatively minor, except the one for between Manitoba and Saskatchewan, which is planned to be 2,000 megawatts. Now, just to put in perspective, that's two-thirds of total power generation in Saskatchewan on a typical day in the spring or fall. That's enormous. The only reason you would build a 2,000-megawatt intertie is if you're planning to build two 1,000-megawatt reactors in southeast Saskatchewan, which is almost guaranteed would be at Rafferty Dam. So what that means is that is the clearest indication that not only is Saskatchewan building nuclear, but we're going to build the big reactors and not the small reactors. That means we'll likely punt on the SMRs, might take a few more years to get the big ones lined up, but they would not be planning for that intertie unless they're going to build those reactors. There's no way on earth we would have the capacity to handle that intertie without reactors that size.
When we had Rupen Pandya on the show, the CEO of SAS Power, I asked him, are these interties good for Saskatchewan because we're an importer of power or an exporter? He said exporter.
Well, that's the thing, is that the narrative for the last 50 years that or more, is that Manitoba had infinite power to export. They're rapidly running out of power. They didn't build enough additional power for their own needs. And instead of them selling us power as they have for generations, in short order, we're going to be selling power to them.
I wanted to get to the Rose Valley Wind facility. We're not going to have time today, but it received a different reception. Can we say that, Brian?
Yeah, so I was there for that, and the Hutterite Colony actually had a choir singing, which is a little bit different than the reception Enbridge got for the Weyburn project.
I was going to say, there's no choir singing in Weyburn. We'll talk about that the next time you join us. Brian, always appreciate having you on the show.
Awesome, thank you.
Brian Zinchuk, editor, owner of PipelineOnline.ca. We'll take our break and come back to Saskatchewan's smartest radio listener next on 650 CKOM, 980 CJME.